Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very excited to welcome recording artist Victoria Duffield to the show to talk about her music career and what she has planned for the future. We then chat with pet expert Warren Eckstein about how to handle your pets during the holiday season. Our etiquette expert Karen Cleveland stops in to give tips about hosting fantastic holiday parties. Also, our dietitian Kim Airy gives her two cents on how to manage your eating during the festive period. Then we wrap things up with addiction expert Denise Crocta about handling the holidays if you have an addict in the family.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is the one and only Victoria Duffield. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your career. Did you know since you were like teeny tiny that you wanted to be an entertainer?
Yeah, it sounds funny, but it really was. It's always been in my blood. It's always been something I wanted to do. I mean, I would take advantage of any family member, any relative that came over to the house. My mom would say, then it would be, okay, showtime. Mommy, when's showtime? And I'd have everybody sit on the couch and I would perform for them. I'd dance, I'd sing. I had this like little microphone stand, I remember when I was younger, it was like plastic, but it worked, and like you could like turn a button on and it would like amplify your voice, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. I felt like Britney Spears. So yeah, it's always been something I'd love to do. I mean, starting off with dance class and then moving into performing with singing. So it's always been something I've loved, and I've never really had an issue getting up in front of people. And that's why like public speaking in English class was always like, oh, it's public speaking time? Yes, like that's so awesome. It's so much time is spent on it, and for me it's not even a thought of getting in front of people.
And what is a big memory for you where you knew that you were starting to make it as a professional career?
Well, I mean, performing around like Abbotsford, my hometown, there would be like the occasional person who would recognize me places, but not very much. So once I was on like the Next Star and people kind of saw me in a different light where I was someone on television, it kind of from there, after that, just having people sort of come up to me around places or going through the mall and people following me and asking for pictures, it's like, all right, I think something's kind of happening now. People know who I am, and it was always very exciting. And I was when I was younger, I practiced my autograph as soon as I could start to write my name. Like as soon as I knew how to write, I took all these pieces of paper and I wrote my name, and I drew like a flower or a rainbow, and I would hand them out to people who came to the door, or I'd walk with my mom's places and I'd hand them out to people on the street and say, this is my autograph for when I'm famous someday. My mom thought it was hilarious. She's like, I don't even know what she's going to be famous for, but apparently she wants to do something. So yeah, it's always been something I've enjoyed. So now, I mean, signing my autograph so many times, I do still think of that, of how much I've been waiting for this moment.
Now, your career has obviously started to really kickstart and it's going now. Can you look back and say that there's a moment right now that you can't believe that you've actually got to do this?
Well, for me, a huge moment was performing in Rogers Arena in Vancouver. I mean, it was great performing all the huge stadiums with the Big Time Rush Cody Simpson tour in September. For me, I mean, I've seen Britney Spears at Rogers Arena. I've seen Madonna. I've seen all these amazing artists. So for me to know that I was performing there was a huge thing for me to just kind of grasp and sort of get the concept of, wow, I'm the same stadium I'm performing in. So that's definitely something that impacted me a lot.
Now, you brought up Britney Spears, and I've said this when I've introduced you before, that you really seem to embody her. Not that you're emulating her, but you really have that touch and that feel. What do you feel when people say, oh my God, like she has this Britney Spears-esque going on?
I'm absolutely flattered. I love hearing that. She was someone I looked up to so much when I was younger, and I had this called a VHS. Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. Shows the era we're in now. A VHS of her tour in Hawaii, and it just kind of showed what I like to it. It showed her as a normal person and just her sort of having fun with her dancers and surprising. It was like this whole video they made of her surprising fans and rehearsing and then performing, and I would just study it and just watch it all the time, and I still know all the words to her first album. I listen to it so much, even when I'm playing the song now, I'm like, why do I still know these words? So, I mean, she was just someone who I looked up to so much, and I still love her as an artist and just think she's so amazing, just her star quality she has. So for someone to say that I sort of have the same kind of spark as her, I think is really cool. I've captured it. I'm excited.
Tell us about your album, Shut Up and Dance. It's been doing extremely well. You've had so many great singles off that. Can you tell us
what the album means to you and what you want your fans and your evolving fans, because you're getting more as you cross the country and make new fans. So what do you want them to take away from it?
I think the main thing we wanted to release Shut Up and Dance first was just to kind of get across that I'm a dance artist. So I think with this album, just sort of getting to know me as a pop dance performer, and so great to have the album out and for everyone in Canada to hear, and looking forward to other countries hearing my music hopefully soon too. And I'm going to be hopefully getting back into writing for my next album too, and kind of seeing what take I want to go on it. I still do like dance pop music, but I mean there's still so many sides you can take of that, so I'll kind of see what I'm influenced by and take it from there.
What do your fans mean to you?
They mean everything. I couldn't do this without fans, and they support me, they inspire me, they encourage me, and they make me love what I do even more. I mean, I'm a person who loves working hard and love performing, but I couldn't perform without my fans. There's, you know, it would be different performing in the theater with nobody in it than performing it with people, you know, cheering for me. So they're everything. I couldn't do this without them, and you can't be an artist, you can't be a performer without people that like you and like your music. So they're a huge part of it, and they make everything happen, and they're the people that buy your music and are the reason why I do this. So I'm so thankful for all the fans that I have in Canada and just all the support they've given. I think it's cool how fast it all kind of happened. I thought my first single would kind of come out and it would kind of be like almost wasted per se, and then the second single would be when people start to realize who I am. So I was surprised for my first single for people to have caught on to me and as an artist and like me so soon, which I think, I mean, it, I just think it's so funny. Like for me, I would fangirl over like Britney Spears, and for people like fangirling per se over me, I think like, really, me? That's so cool.
And how do you feel about social media? Because this is a way that couldn't be done in the past, where you can actually connect so directly to your fans via Twitter and Facebook.
I love it. I'm so thankful that I'm kind of in a time where that's so big and you can do that. It would just be so different. It must have been, I don't know, I mean, I guess they would connect with people at their shows and stuff. So I think this is great, not only to let them know for upcoming shows or stuff going on, but to just talk, say something back to them. If they say, you know, great job, I'll try to reply and say thank you for coming, and I remember meeting you were wearing this or whatever. So I think it's great with that personal connection, immediate response that you can do, and I just think that's great.
Now I have to ask you about this, because we have Cody Simpson fans that listen to our show, because we've had Cody on our show. So we have some Simpsonizers that listen. So you got to do a duet with him, and you also got to do a spoof video of Gangnam Style. So you need to tell me about the duet first, and then what it was like to do the spoof video.
Yes, really cool. I was really excited when I sort of, it all came together that he was featuring on They Don't Know About Us, and being able to shoot the music video together. We got to, spend some time together and get to know him, and he's a really funny guy. He's really, really nice, really, really humble, down to earth, and also very hardworking. So we're actually quite similar, because there's times where we're having fun and joking around, and then there's times when, we got to focus and let's get this done. And but just throughout the day, I mean, funny things, like my shoe broke at one point, so we had to get upstairs, so he gave me a piggyback upstairs, or just different funny things. He's really cool, and he's really, really sweet with his fans, too. It's always something that's neat to see, is how much he really cares for them.
Now, something I've noticed with both you and Cody is the fact that you have a lot of family support. Can you talk to me about the way, you know, I always notice your mom is with you. What does it mean to have your family behind you as you try to forge this, you know, pop dance career, not only in Canada, but around the world?
It means a lot. I've always had really great support from my family. I mean, it would be really hard to have gotten this far without their support. And my dad, you know, financially supporting me from all my dance classes when I was younger. I mean, dance isn't, it's not cheap to be a dancer. So, I mean, it costs a lot of money for all the dance classes and costumes and dance competitions, and my mom always being there to help, and she was always the mom backstage to, oh, I have that, or, oh my gosh, I need this. Oh, guess what? That's in my bag too. So it's great, and her traveling with me all the time, and she keeps me organized, and like, oh, I can't believe I forgot this. I grabbed it for you. It always happens. Like, it's great, and I also have great support for my brothers too, and I look forward to seeing them when I you know, get home from being on the road. And so it's good, and also having my mom with me keeps, you know, homesickness is a little less because I can talk to my dad on Skype and see my mom all the time.
Now, I want to ask you this as well. You mentioned Britney before being an influence. Who else is an influence musically for you? Especially, I'm wondering, because you are a dance artist, like, do you look up to, like, some old school people, let's say, like, a Janet Jackson or, you know, Whitney Houston?
Yep. Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, people that I've looked up to, too. I have, like, Janet Jackson, like, tapes of her concerts and stuff, and I'll study them and just, like, their different moves. I've seen Janet Jackson also live in concert, too. I've seen Britney Spears, Janet Jackson, and Madonna, which I think is very cool, because those are all the people that kind of do what I want to do, and so it's great just watching them and seeing how they handle their audience and just picking up tips. I'm always one to be hungry to learn more and to improve, so those are definitely people that I've looked up to, and I, you know, hope to kind of go in their same kind of path.
Are you your biggest critic?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think you can move past that and pat yourself on the back eventually?
I mean, just certain times, I will feel proud, obviously, of different things, and I feel proud of all the writing I was able to do on my album, or just different shows that I thought, okay, that went well. But there's always something that I, you know, this could have been better. Or listening back, I go, oh my goodness, like, oh, I should fix that. But I mean, I think it's something that's it's good about me is there's always going to be a time where I want to do more, I want to get better, and I think that's the only way to kind of evolve as an artist and to keep changing is to always want to have things you want to fix and get better at.
And what can we look forward to with Victoria Duffield in 2013?
A new album. I haven't started the writing for it yet, so figuring out what that's going to be. More performances. I hope to go on a couple more tours. And, lots more music and lots more to share with my fans.
Now, last question. We are broadcast around the world online. We're also on 4 radio stations in Japan and Australia and Malaysia and Singapore. So you have fans that are now going to be listening to you around the world. What do you say to your global fans?
Thank you. Unfortunately, my music is only kind of in Canada. I'm only performing in Canada so far, but hopefully that's not for long. Really excited to open up internationally in 2013, hopefully, and get out there. I already see some amazing support around the world on Twitter, so I thank you for that, and it doesn't go unnoticed, and, you know, love you guys too, and I can't wait to show that and get my music there for you and to perform for you too.
Fantastic. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
The holiday season is upon us, and some families might be thinking about adopting a pet. But are pets really a good gift for the holidays? International pet expert Warren Eckstein joins us to discuss ways of dealing with and involving your pets during the holidays. Warren, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Glad to be with you, Kelly. And by the way, it's the worst idea ever to give pets for the holidays.
Well, that was my first question. So can you explain that or go more into detail, please?
Yeah, no one's normal during the holidays. If you grew up in a family like I did, you realize the craziness that goes on around the holidays. People coming in and out, family coming in and out, gift wrap over here, trees in the house, menorahs in the house, candles being burned. It's a crazy, crazy time. And with all that insanity going on, you really can't devote the time to a new pet that's really necessary. So you're kind of setting yourself up for failure right off the bat.
Now, since it is the holiday season, you know, let's say you already do have a pet, or maybe you even got the pet, you know, in November, let's say, and it's still a relatively new pet. How can you ensure that pet safety during, like you said, the crazy holiday season?
Well, first of all, it's really important. Now, the Christmas tree is probably the most dangerous. And by the way, the holiday season is the most dangerous time of the year for pets. Just take the Christmas tree, for example. Just putting water in the Christmas tree so the tree stays alive can be very dangerous. A lot of people put aspirin in there. A lot of people will put some type of a preservative in the water feeding the Christmas tree, and the dogs and cats are attracted to that. They can drink it, and it's pretty toxic to them. Especially cats and aspirin can really, really make them sick or even kill them. So that's just one part. The decorations on the bottom of the tree, the glass Christmas balls and all of those, can be very dangerous with the cat swatting it and then cutting his feet. So I always recommend that people put anything breakable on the top of the tree and things that are not breakable on the bottom of the tree. And there is a little secret that I kind of use. You want to keep the pets away from the tree this time of year. So underneath the tree, what I often suggest, especially with people with cats, is to put down some spots of just double stick tape and blow up a couple of balloons and put them on the double stick tape, and the cat will walk on it once or twice, the balloon will break, and I promise he'll leave the tree alone.
That is a great tip. And when it comes to presents under the tree. That obviously, I would think, would be a huge temptation for pets.
Yeah, because my dogs know there's something under the tree for them. So from the minute I put something down there, they're checking it out. So I usually don't put anything under the tree until the last evening. So I'm with them. And by the way, in terms of giving a pet for the holidays, let me kind of say what I recommend. It's a really kind of an interesting approach, and a lot of people may not be thrilled about it. But years ago, Kelly, I had a close friend of mine that wanted a cat. And he desperately wanted a cat. So what I did, I knew the holidays was a really bad time to give it to him. So underneath his Christmas tree, he found a litter box. It was clean, by the way. A litter box and a copy of my book, How to Get Your Cat to Do What You Want, with a promissory note saying that after the holidays, him and myself would visit the local shelter and find him the cat he wanted. So if someone does want a pet, there are lots of things you can do. It's just cat, a litter box, a book on dogs, a book on birds, a book on fish, and really great ideas. There is a little note saying, after the holidays, we'll take a trip to the Shelter of Humane Society and adopt that perfect pet for you.
I think that's a great idea as well, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's good if you educate yourself first, and some people actually have a few days off at Christmas, so that gives you time to actually read, and then there's nothing wrong with waiting a few days before actually getting the pet. Like, a few more days is not going to kill you.
And think about the surprise factor. All of a sudden, you're giving someone a gift that they're going to have to commit themselves for the next 10 to 20 years. So you really have to make sure that this person wants a pet, and it's just not a good idea to buy it on impulse. And also, a lot of people tend to go to those pet stores and buy the puppy mill dogs this time of year, which is really, really a bad idea. So it's always a good idea to adopt or go to the local shelter. And also the weather. You know, the weather outside this time of year is pretty cool and chilly, and it's a lot more difficult to housebreak that new puppy anyway.
I wanted to ask you as well, what happens if you do receive a pet from someone over the holidays, but you're really not prepared to become an owner? Like, maybe someone just thought, oh, you know, they've talked about it in the past, and I'm just going to get it for them.
Yeah, see, but here's the problem with that. I'm the type of person that once something comes into my house and it kisses me and it hugs me, it's there for life. So when that pet does come in, what's going to happen to that pet if you say no? Is it going back to a pet store? Is it going back to a shelter? That's why it's so important to really think out way in advance what you're going to do. Now, I'm going to be contradictory of myself here. If, in fact, the Christmas Eve or whatever holiday you're celebrating, you know of a dog or a cat that's in dire straits at a shelter and just needs to get out, and that person, in fact, has made the commitment to get a dog, I don't care if you adopt them Christmas morning. But if it's a matter of saving a dog or cat's life, that's a different thing. But planning ahead is really the critical part, and making sure the person that's receiving the pet waits till after the holidays.
You're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show, and joining me is the Dr. Phil of Pets and author of How to Get Your Dog to Do What You Want, Warren Eckstein. Make sure to check him out, warrenextein.com. When we talk about, again, dangers around the holiday, I think one of the things that pop up to me, because it actually happened to my sister's dog, not at the holidays, but after her wedding, was someone fed her dog chocolate, and that is obviously around all the time at the holidays.
And chocolate's very, very dangerous. There are a lot of items that people are unaware of. For example, chocolate is very dangerous for our dogs and for our cats. In terms of cats, I had mentioned aspirin before, but xylitol, so many people use that now. It's the sugar replacement in sugarless gum and all those items. That can be very deadly and toxic to our pets as well. Macadamia nuts can be toxic. Onions, grapes, raisins can be toxic to our pets. So that's really stuff you have to watch out for. And that's a great point, Kelly, because when you have family coming over and friends coming over, they tend to say, you know what, let me give the dog a little bit of this, let me give the cat a little bit of that. What I generally do is I put out a tray with my pet's treats and say, if you want to give my pet something, use one of their treats, because the turkey bones and the ham bones and all the other items, if it's not toxic, if the dog or cat eats too much of it, they're going to get sick, and a trip to the vet is not what's warranted on Christmas Eve.
Do you think, Warren, that the pets need to be maybe kept separate during the holidays? I mean, not obviously if it's just a family that's around and they're used to it, but if you are having a gathering, is it a smart idea to maybe keep the pets upstairs?
You know, Kelly, if it's my family, the dogs leave anyway. you know, it really depends on the situation. I really think that having your pets incorporated as part of the family is a good idea. But if it's the type of situation where you have 15, 20 people in a house and everyone's going crazy, it's not a bad idea to give the dog or cat a kind of quiet area where they can go and hang out with themselves, perhaps with a couple of the people that are really big pet lovers. And the other thing you really have to be fearful of is with the people coming and going, is the doors opening and closing, and cats lights and Christmas ribbon and string, very, very dangerous as well. And by the way, here's something important. If your cat does swallow string or your dog does swallow something like that, don't try to pull it out yourself. You don't know what's on the other end. Take your dog or cat to the vet and let them handle it.
How else would you incorporate your pet into the holidays while making sure that they stay safe?
Well, number one is I make sure they have gifts. And number two is I try to keep them really well mentally stimulated and exercised during the holidays. You know, there's nothing worse than a dog that's not getting enough exercise and people are coming over and the dog's jumping. So that mental stimulation, that physical activity is really important. I include them in the holidays as well. And generally under my tree, there's more gifts for the pets than there are for anyone else in the family. But the bottom line is just to make sure that you're a little bit more conscientious about where your pet is, what's lying around the house. Because people tend to forget. I mean, they leave medications, for example, this isn't Christmas, but they'll leave medications on top of the counter and the dog or cat gets into it. So just common sense goes a really, really long way. And also, cold weather-wise, I know it's getting chilly where you are, and the bottom line is this. Years ago, I would make fun of anyone who put a sweater on their dog or cat because my dogs have always walked around buck naked. However, our dogs and cats are spending much more time inside, and therefore their body doesn't change. So if you're taking your dog outside and you need a jacket and your dog's not spending a lot of time outside, perhaps a sweater or a jacket's a good idea.
What's your position on dealing with the pets and children during the holidays? Because oftentimes you're having friends come over that have kids that may not have a pet in their own home, so that could be a potentially dangerous situation as well.
And I think you really have to just be really careful about watching the kids to make sure that they know how to be around the dog. And I really think it's a great idea, and I'm glad you brought that up. Whether or not you have pets in your family, 60% of people in North America do. So even if you don't have pets, it's really a good idea for your kids' own safety to teach them how to behave and react around pets, because they're going to run into them at friends' homes or in the neighborhood. So I would just make sure you watch them carefully. I would make sure the introduction is a very positive thing and just kind of instruct the kids in terms of what they can and can't do and keep that real eagle eye on them.
We talked about how the holidays obviously bring up crazy and chaos just because there's so many people coming and going. You've got, you know, you're hosting parties, you've got to be here and there and everywhere. So there's, I think even though it's a festive and a fun time, there's a bit of extra anxiety going on. I'm wondering, does that transfer over to your animals, or can that? And then if that can, that extra anxiety, how do you make sure that doesn't become a problem where the dog might snap?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I just recently had a seminar specifically on the fact that the personality and the mood of the owner goes from one end of the leash right to the other. There's no doubt any dog guardian out there will tell you that their dog picks up on their moods and their anxieties. So if someone is anxious around the dog, specifically a child, the dog may in fact not know how to react. That's why the socialization aspect early on with a dog or a cat is really critical. But again, it goes back to the concept of the kids really need to learn how to be around the pets. In other words, you handle them gently, you can give them a new toy, and that's something else I recommend. When people come to the house for holidays, they generally, and this may sound a little eccentric, and heaven forbid, Kelly, I should never sound eccentric, but when people come to the house, they're bringing gifts for everybody. What I would do is I would have a bag by my front door, and in that bag would be all these gifts that I purchased myself for my pets. Therefore, when anyone comes into the house, the dog is really excited about them being there, but more excited because now he's distracted by the concept that he's getting something special when they walk in.
Fantastic. Now, I wanted to ask you as well, we've been talking a lot about dogs and cats. What happens, though, if you do have like an aquarium or you've got some kind of bird? Is that also something to be really on the lookout for?
Well, the aquarium is not such a big deal as long as you make sure people aren't throwing too much food, because that's the biggest problem with fish is they're overfed and it kind of makes the tank dead. But birds, this is a really great, great question, because birds, it's a very dangerous time of year. There's a lot of cooking that goes on, and birds have small lungs. So anytime you're cooking, and birds should not be kept in the kitchen, because Teflon, self-cleaning ovens, all of that is very, very deadly to birds. And a lot of people think it's a good idea to bring the bird into the kitchen area so they can talk to it. No, you never keep a bird in the kitchen area. Again, Teflon and their self-cleaning ovens. Important also to note that birds can take cooler temperatures. What they can't take is drafts, so you want to make sure they're not in a drafty area as well. And again, it's the same basic thing. If you have a lot of family coming over and kids and you have a bird that's socialized and can come out, that's fine. But if not, it may be a good idea to remove the bird so that he's just not overwhelmed by all of the different sounds and things that are going on.
What would be your biggest tip for, you know, families with animals around the holidays?
conscientious observation. I know that's an interesting word, but just making sure you know where your pet is, because very often at the holidays, we're totally focused on a million different things. But the bottom line is the most important things in your life are your family, and your pets are part of your family. So just as you would know where your kids are, watch the door, watch the gates in the backyard, watch what's lying around the house. Just be a real conscientious observer, and you can get through the holidays without that trip to the vet.
And before I let you go, Warren, can you please give us an idea when would be the best time to be getting a pet? I know we discussed that the holidays, not such a great idea. Is there a specific time of the year that is better for people, whether it's a dog or a cat?
You know, it's interesting, but January and February, the shelters and humane societies all over are full because of the people that did give pets for the holidays, the people that didn't want those pets and brought them back. So I generally recommend anytime you're going to adopt a dog from a shelter, I don't care if it's 90 degrees in June or 3 degrees in January, anytime you're going to get a dog out of a shelter is a good time. But usually January and February is when these shelters are really, really full in the spring for kittens.
Warren, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Kelly.
That was international pet expert Warren Eckstein. Again, if you have any questions for Warren, want to learn more about him, make sure to visit his website, warreneckstein.com.
Capture your need for sound.
With the holiday season fast approaching, are you planning on attending a party or hosting one yourself? Either way, our etiquette expert is here with tips on how to survive the holiday stress. Karen Cleveland tackles all things etiquette, from the traditional to the taboo. She truly believes good manners make the world a better place. Karen, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Good morning, Kelly.
So with the holidays, you know, just around the corner, tell me, what are the holiday essentials that a good host or hostess should have?
Yes, the holidays are here. I can't believe it. I hosted my first little do last weekend, so the season is upon us. And I think some of the basic tricks are having a well-organized schedule is the best arsenal a hostess can have in her toolkit. And then some good shelf-stable provisions will help you from just stockpiling so you're not running out to the store back and forth over the entire month of December. Stockpile some good basics.
And what would those be?
I look for, I would stock for your basic bar, some top shelf ingredients, and then also there's some smart shortcuts which we can talk to in a little bit later. I've got some ideas for you.
Okay. Awesome. Now, I had a question as well. I know that we're talking mainly about the holiday season, but in general, is it a good idea to have some provisions throughout the year in case an impromptu visit happens?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great idea, Kelly. If you're of the mind that you know, when you tell people to drop by, you really mean it, you might find yourself with some unexpected guests popping over, which is really nice. And I think when that happens, no one is really expecting, you know, it's not a full-service restaurant, but if you can offer your guests some great teas, some snacks, or like a proper cocktail or a great glass of wine, or even just a cup of coffee, those things make the difference. But you just don't want to be caught without any basic provisions. So now's a good time to stock up. You know, while you're doing your weekly grocery shop or whatever, pick up a few basic things so that if someone did drop by for tea or coffee or for a drink, you've got the things on hand to offer them that.
Now, if you are hosting a party, what kind of things could you be or should you be preparing, you know, the night before the event?
Mm-hmm. And you can even look even further back from that, Kelly. So you can have a think about the week before and then the day before. So the week before, I would have your menu sorted. And I have a look at everything that I could possibly prep for in advance. And I've got my menu listed out. I think of things that could be chopped, grated, parboiled, you name it, and get all that done out of the way. And then the night before I'm hosting, I like to make sure I've got all my dishware and servingware sorted out, so that if I'm taking a massive roast bird out of the oven, I know just what tray I'm going to stick it on. I get all my chopping, grating, all those things done. I typically have a playlist lined up. And then if I'm really on the ball, hopefully I've got ice in the freezer, my bar sorted out, and things like flowers and decor at the ready. Flowers are nice to pick up the day out, but you can certainly pick them up the night before and they'll still stay nice and fresh. So those are things you can do the night before.
What kinds of things should you have stocked up in your pantry, if anyone still uses that word?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm assuming that's an important place to have things ready to go that are out of sight.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I know, wouldn't it be nice to have a massive, like, full stock pantry as a full separate room?
Yeah.
But even if you have a very tight space, there's a couple things that might make your life easy if you're hosted over the holidays. So first thing to consider is you don't have to go crazy. It's not not a full-service restaurant. So I look for a couple really good top-notch ingredients, have a solid white and a solid red wine, maybe some bubbly. I love to serve Prosecco. It's just so, it's so festive, and you can pop a couple garnishes in it, and it just looks really special. Or a signature cocktail is great. But don't go crazy. Like, having a couple solid offerings is awesome for your guests, and make sure you've got your glassware that accompanies that. And then in terms of other things like olives, cheese, meats, they keep for a while, so they're good to have in your fridge ready to go. But then also things like puff pastry is a go-to for me. Stick in the freezer, saw it the day before, and I've used that in many, many a hosting instance for sweets or savory. So they're just some good, smart shortcuts to have popped in the freezer.
Are there any items that people should have on hand the night of the party? And I'm assuming that is, you know, stuff you have to get day of.
Always ice. I'm always surprised how much ice I go through. What else? Some extra white candles. These are sort of my little touches. But then also, I'm of the mind that the best host is a responsible host. So it might not come top of mind, but I would always have some cab fare ready. So if you need to get some guests home in a pinch, you can do that on the fly. So it's probably not the top of most people's hosting list, but having cab fare to get guests home safely is important.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is our etiquette expert, Karen Cleveland. For more tips and ideas, go to www.mannersaresexy.com. You can also follow Karen on Twitter @schoolfinishing. Making sure, you know, that everyone is having a good time and that the event is ready to go is obviously, you know, a stressful event, I think, for most people. Even if you're pretty low-key about it, there's obviously some expectation that you're trying to, you know, do a good job. What can you do to actually ensure that you're also having a bit of fun as the host or the hostess and enjoying being with your guests and not just running around trying to make sure everyone else is okay?
That's such a great question, Kelly. And I still get a little pre-party jitters. You want to make sure that everyone's having fun. And I get a little anxious, too. So the first thing that I do is build in a bit of time if I can. It doesn't always happen. But best case scenario is you build in a little bit of time before your guests arrive so that you as a host have time to chill out. So whether that means putting on a song that you really like or putting on some mascara and having a glass of wine, whatever, just something to, you know, to demark your day from switching from event planner and host and chef to getting into a party hosting mode. So that's important, blocking off a little bit of time for yourself, because the host really does set the tone. If you're having fun and you're really enjoying your company, that can't help but be contagious with your guests. So it's very important. And then the other thing is prep food that keeps you away from your kitchen so that you're not a slave to the stove the entire night.
That's a good idea. I think a lot of people get caught up in, you know, heating up this and that and you know, meatballs that they have to keep stirring and all that kind of stuff.
Totally. Yeah, totally. So look for things that you can serve that you can stockpile in advance and then just replenish them as the night goes on. So you're not chained to the kitchen the entire night. So you can actually get out and enjoy your guests. Fancy that.
Exactly. Good plan. If you yourself are going to a holiday party, should you bring a gift for the host or the hostess? And if so, I guess, what kind of gift should you consider bringing? Because I think the go-to is a bottle of wine.
Yeah, a bottle of wine is always a great choice. And certainly it's, you know, the ubiquitous hostess gift. There's nothing wrong with it. It's popular for a reason. So definitely feel free to bring a bottle of wine if someone is hosting you. But don't be fussed if they don't serve it that night. So maybe you've brought a really special bottle of wine that you're excited for them to open and you can't wait for them to try it. But if your host has really put a lot of time and care into the menu that they're serving that night, they may have already lined up their wine pairing. So don't take it personally if they don't serve the wine that you brought. Mm-hmm. But another thing that is also nice is something to consider is something for the next day. So if you've hosted a fabulous party, you're probably going to be pretty zonked the next day. So if you put together a little something for your host for the morning after, so maybe some great coffee or tea, some fresh baked goods or scones, that's nice. And then you'll know that they'll rest easy the next morning and they can put their feet up and enjoy a little spread that you've brought over for them.
Awesome. And I wanted to point out something about the wine thing too, which I've noticed. Like you said, I'm glad you said don't get your nose at a joint if they don't serve it. Because I often find if I go to events, whether it's holiday season or not, but particularly in holiday season, the host or hostess is usually on some level frantic, whether they have it under control or not. But it's like everything is a blur. So they're probably not even going to remember at that
who
moment.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kelly.
So when it comes to, I guess, the evening itself,
do you as a host or hostess need to make sure it continues to like run along? Like, do you have to check in on people, or you know what I mean? Like, I find sometimes people are hanging out in a corner and you're not sure what to do with them.
I know, and I find every party eventually turns into a kitchen party anyways.
Yeah,
I like to just sort of keep a bird's eye view on my guests and make sure everyone's glass is full and they're having fun. But I don't muddle too much, I suppose. Let them have a good time and make sure they have everything they need. But yeah, I stay pretty close without hovering. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's very good. That's very good. And what are your tips for actually wrapping up the night? Because I know this can be an awkward situation.
Yeah, when you're ready to go to bed and your guests aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Take it as a compliment, I suppose, because it means that you hosted a hell of a party and no one wants it to end. So, you know, in 5 years, they're really going to care if you got an extra hour of sleep.
Right.
So I wouldn't get too flushed. And I would, you know, take that as a compliment and carry on with the night. But when you're really ready to wrap and you have a few stragglers, you can enlist the help of a trusted friend. So if you have a partner in crime, you can enlist them to sort of set the tone and say, I'm going to wrap it up and call it a night. It's been great. And hopefully your other guests take, you know, the cue from them.
Right.
But you really, you know, you can't kick people out of your house. You're hosting. So enjoy their company and, you know, take an Advil the next morning.
It's funny. I was at an event, I would say probably a month ago, and I stayed up past my bedtime because being on the radio, I have to get up at 4:30 or 4.
Right.
And so I actually stayed up past my bedtime, left though, I think it was 10:30 or 11. So that's way past my bedtime. But anyways, went home, all that kind of stuff. Then I find out the next morning from a friend of mine who was at the party, she called me at work at 5. She knew I was getting in at 5. And so she called me. Well, maybe 5:15 she called me. They were just leaving the same party.
Wow. I want to go to her party.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
And it was, and she told me that at one point there was like 4 of them left, you know, including the host or hostess. And they were like hanging off the couch with their legs on the couch, and one was on the floor. And I guess the hostess didn't mind, but I was like, I don't know that I could handle someone staying the whole night. Like, that was, you know, like I left at, you know, like I said, 10:30 or 11, and they stayed till 4:35 in the morning. Like, that's a big commitment.
That is a chunk of time for a host. Yeah. But again, the mark, I think it's a good testament to their hosting abilities if people are sticking around when the sun comes up. It means it was a really great party. It'll probably make for some great stories down the line.
I think so. That could happen though. Like, that you might kind of put in your head that, you know, depending on how you're going, you might have stragglers that stay till early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, if you're setting those cues, you know, if you want your guests to wrap it up, probably not the time to put on a really loud, raucous song and pull out a bottle of tequila to send them out the door. So, you know, there's other cues that a host can offer, like you know, the music that's playing, the drinks that you're serving. But if, you know, if people do want to make a big night of it, I wouldn't be too fussed.
Okay. And here's something that is always a concern to me. How do you be a responsible host or hostess? I know you briefly talked about the cab fare at the beginning, but, you know, how do you make sure everyone gets home safe?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, every host wants to make sure that their guests are having fun, but making sure your guests get home safely supersedes any other host's responsibilities. So I guess a couple points, Kelly. One is moderate your own alcohol consumption so that you can better gauge any situations that might need your attention. So that's really important. The second is, if you do need to host overnight guests in a pinch, if you have that area already set up, they'll probably feel like it's less of an imposition. So if you've got that second bedroom, make sure there's linens on it and it's not, you know, turned into a sports locker full of your golf stuff. Make sure that if you're ready to host people, you're really ready to host them overnight. And hopefully they'll be more apt to take you up on an invitation to stay the night. And then having cab fare, as I mentioned earlier, is another a great way just to, you know, if you need to subtly get someone home, tabs on you and never bring it up again. Just make sure they get home safely.
That's a good point, because if that comes up again, well, remember that time when I, you know, paid for you to get home? Like, that doesn't...
Exactly.
That's bad. Don't
exactly,
be that person.
Kelly. No. not okay. cool. It's not an opportunity. It's not a chance to like grandstand about how great of a friend you were. Uh-huh. Just take it on the chin, get them in the cab, get them home, and carry on with your night.
Do you post-mortem the event the next day? Is that what like a smart host or hostess would do to sort of see, you know, I mean, not to come down on yourself like, oh, those, you know, mushroom puffs weren't fabulous, but do you sort of just take
a like, debrief?
Yeah, like a little debrief of what happened and maybe to improve upon the next party?
I suppose, yeah. I sort of look to my guests for cues on that, but I would do inventory. If there was a new recipe that I was test driving, I'd ask people to give it to me straight, what they thought of it. But the next day, yeah. I mean, as I'm pulling my place together and doing a little cleanup, I suppose I do a mental postmortem, but I don't pull out a notepad by any stretch.
Okay.
But as I'm chatting with people who were there and thank them for coming, yeah, I'd use it as an opportunity to, if there was a recipe that someone really liked or a wine they commented on, I'd share it. I have one particular friend, we always swap the playlist from the night before and email it if anyone liked it.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the morning after can be a lot of fun. Get debriefed.
Awesome. And before I let you run, what would be your biggest tip then for holiday season partying as the host or hostess?
My biggest tip? That's a great question. It's a loaded question.
Yes, it is.
I'd say to have fun yourself.
Oh, good. Okay.
So if you put a little bit of planning into it, it's not that scary. Because if you're inviting your loved ones and your friends to your home, it's not a test. If they're showing up, they're obviously pretty fond of you. So it's not a litmus test here for your friendship or your relationship. So just have fun and start small. So if you find hosting intimidating, which I still do, you know, a full-service dinner party for 12 is probably not the most safe terrain to cut your teeth. So start with a small couple groups of friends or even just a little cocktail party. But enjoy it yourself. That's my best piece of advice, I guess.
Awesome. Well, Karen, thank you so much, and we wish you all the best for the holiday season as well.
Oh, you too, Kelly. Thank you for having me. Happy holidays.
That was our etiquette expert, Karen Cleveland. Again, for more tips and ideas, check out her website, mannersaresexy.com. You can also follow her on Twitter, @schoolfinishing.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
The holiday season is here, and with that comes delicious holiday foods. Dietitian Kim Airy joins us to talk about tips and ideas on ways to enjoy the holiday season without losing out on nutrition. Kim, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So when it comes to some of the most delicious foods, what kinds of foods should people either try to stay away from when they're doing the office party and the holiday partying at home, or at least moderate?
Well, I think the biggest culprit at some parties can actually be the liquid calories.
Wow.
Yeah. We know that some drinks, like if we're looking at things like eggnog or mixed drinks, they can come in, they can ring in at 400 calories for just a small glass.
Wow.
So that's one of the things you want to be really careful of, because it's really easy to have two or three glasses of eggnog and there you go. You've just lost 1,200 calories.
Wow. That's.
You
know, I think a lot of people don't think necessarily about that. They're like, oh, I'm just having a drink and I've just had one cheese puff, you know, but meanwhile they've had three drinks.
Yeah. And the other thing that happens too when you consume alcohol is that it has this really interesting effect on your resolutions, which is that they fly out the window. And so you might have walked into this party saying, you know, I'm going to have, when they pass the hors d'oeuvres, I'm only going to choose the veggies. But after you have a couple of drinks, you kind of think, nah, veggies, you know, let's have those goodies. And you forget all about what your plans were. So that's another reason to be really careful about what you're consuming. Liquid calories. What are you having as liquids?
I have a question as well, just about people's attitudes. I don't know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kim, but I almost feel like the month of December is an attitude where I think everyone, just like when you go shopping sometimes, like when, you know, you have a budget and you're like, okay, I need to stick to this budget. But then you get into the store and you hear the holiday music and you feel festive and then you blow like $700 on, you know, whatever, because you're like, oh, I want, you know, this, that, and the other person to have this, that, and something else. And I almost feel it's the same attitude with the food. It's like, oh, it's December, it's holidays, my family is here, I don't see them. Like, and then you just blow everything up to bits.
Right, and I think part of that is because there are some foods that we eat at Christmas time that we don't eat. You know, during this holiday season, we don't eat the other 364 days a year, which is kind of funny, but we don't, even though we might really like them. So one of the things I always tell people to do is at that point, if you know there's something you really like, you're going to eat that one. So, Kelly, your favorite food, you're going to eat it. So why are you wasting calories on the ones you don't really like that much? And why are you wasting time and energy and calories on ones that you can get every day? So I think it's a really good idea to say, you know what? I know, for example, my kids, I never make stuffing and I never make gravy. So my kids know on Christmas Day when they go to their aunts, they're getting really good stuffing with lots of butter in it and really good gravy. And so they lap that up. They practically, you know, my sister-in-law practically brings it, the gravy to the table in glasses for each person because they really enjoy it because they know they're not getting it again. For another, you know, till next Christmas.
Right.
So, and I think that's really a neat way of doing it because they're enjoying, and they don't waste any of their energy on the cranberries, and they don't waste any of their energy or their calories on, you know, the other tidbits that are on the table. They go right for what they like. And I think a lot of clients should be focusing on that, not having everything that's on the table. You don't have to have everything that's there.
Do you think hors d'oeuvres are the bane of people's existence at Christmas?
I have mixed feelings about hors d'oeuvres because one of the reasons I kind of like hors d'oeuvres is because a lot of times we eat at the most inopportune times at Christmas. I don't know why, but why would you think 3 o'clock is lunch? But somehow or other, at Christmas time, holiday time, 3 o'clock becomes lunch.
Right.
Like, what? You're not going to eat your breakfast at 8 or 9 in the morning and then have lunch at 3. That's way too long. So you need hors d'oeuvres. You're not going to have lunch at noon and only eat supper at 8. So, yes, you need to have hors d'oeuvres before that, so that takes the edge off. The problem is a lot of the hors d'oeuvres people serve are really high in calories. So if you're the one who's in charge of the serving, try and make sure that you've got something that's really veggie-based, so it's going to be lower in calories. And you can make some really nice hors d'oeuvres that are based with vegetables. You don't have a lot of bread with them. You don't have to have a lot of, high-calorie foods, and also make sure you give people a plate to eat off of. Somehow or other, when you eat off of a plate, it's much more like you're eating something than when you're just picking things. They kind of disappear when you're just picking at them.
Right. Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our dietitian, Kim Airy. You can check her out on her website, kimairy.com. What do you say, I guess, with regards to, you know, how people should behave at parties when they get there, about should they have a plan, I guess, about what they're going to drink and how much they're going to eat?
Well, I think, yeah, whenever you can go in with a plan, it's a great idea. And I guess one of the first things I always tell people to do is find out when you think you're going to be eating. Because, you know, if your plan, for example, last night we had a Christmas party to go to, and I knew I wouldn't be eating until 7:30 or 8 o'clock because we only got there for 7. So by the time the food was going to get there, it was going to be quite late. So at 5:30, I had a snack. So I wasn't starving when I got there. If I wasn't starving when I got there, I was able to choose, you know, make choices, as opposed to when you get there and they're starving and you just jump on the first thing that you see. So I think that's the first thing, is don't get there too hungry. The second thing I also tell people is wear clothes that are tight around the waistband. And maybe not tight, but at least, you know, snug fitting at the waistband. And for goodness sakes, don't wear your elastic waistbands. That just makes it too comfy to overeat. Whereas if you've got something that's going to fit you a little bit snug at the waistband, or ladies, wear your Spanx or something, because then you're going to feel when you get full and you're going to stop no matter how good it is. And I guess my message to people in the holidays is not so much to resist the goodies, because you might only get them once a year, but to just because you're having a goodie doesn't mean you need to have 27 of them.
Right. I think that's where the breakdown happens.
Get the taste of it, right?
Yeah.
You want to enjoy it and have a small amount. So set it up so that you're not going to go. I have clients who go, they actually wear loose clothes to go, so it'll be more comfortable when they can eat more. And it's like, no. I want you to, you know, it's a challenge to feel when you've got a lot of people and you've got a lot of distractions. So at least if you start feeling tight in your clothes, you'll stop eating sooner.
Now, we touched upon this briefly, but I want to get, I guess, a specific answer from you. When it comes to the drinks, I know we talked about how, you know, so many of them can just be super caloric. What do you say, or what do you give as advice, you know, if you are going to a party and you want to monitor your caloric intake based off the liquids?
Well, I guess there's a couple things to do. One is to beware of to alternate. I usually tell clients to alternate. So maybe have one beverage that's got alcohol in, for example, have one Bloody Caesar, and then have a Virgin Caesar, and alternate. Or have a glass of wine and then have a glass of Perrier or a glass of Diet 7-Up. So at least you're alternating during the evening. So that's going to help you out. That right away is going to decrease the calories, you know, one for one, one for one. Drink water. When you're thirsty during dinner, sip on your water glass. Empty that. Don't keep sipping wine. And especially in a lot of places, as soon as you take, especially if you're in a restaurant, as soon as you take one sip of wine, there's a waiter magically appears and fills up your glass again. So you think you've only consumed one glass of wine, but really it was a whole bottle because just always had one sip out of it. So for goodness sake, sip on your glass of water as much as you can. Try and stay away from drinks with a lot of mixy things in it. So if you're adding cream to a drink or if you're adding a lot of sugar to a drink, that's where you're going to be adding a lot of the calories. So if you're sticking to just plain wine or if you're sticking to something where you can add a diet soft drink to, like a hard liquor with a diet soft drink in it, that's also, you know, not too bad. But remember, as I said before, the problem with alcohol is that it's going to affect your thought processes, and so you will see that your plan kind of will evaporate.
Now, I don't want to be a stick in the mud because I think, you know, everyone really has a pretty good festive outlook about the holidays, and I think that's important. But I guess I just wanted an opinion from you, Kim, when it comes to you hosting a party, if you are hosting a party. Is it important for you to balance out the menu? So, like, yes, you have some goodies, but yes, you're offering healthy choices as well for people who might really be trying to keep it together.
Well, you know what? I think that when you look at around your dining room table and you want to remember that at least 50% of the people there, at least 50% of the people there are going to be monitoring what they're supposed to be monitoring what they're eating because either they're overweight, they have high cholesterol, they have high blood sugar, or they have some medical issue. So I think that, yeah, unless you've got a really, really, really young family, there's going to be a bunch of people there who will really appreciate that you've done some of these things. And yes, why not? Why take a total vacation? And a lot of foods that we eat during the holiday period, if you look at a basic turkey dinner, it's actually quite a balanced meal. Just unfortunately, some of us like forget to eat too many veggies or we add way too much butter to them. But really, there's some great places to go for some wonderful fixes to those recipes. And you can have some wonderful, wonderful foods that taste great and are healthy. I always tell my clients, too, to remember the plate method. So the plate method is that a quarter of your plate should contain foods that are higher in protein, like the turkey. A quarter of your plate should be the foods that are higher in starches, so like the stuffing or rice or potatoes. And then half of your plate should be made up of vegetables, so salad, you know, Brussels sprouts, sweet potatoes, carrots, green beans, all these great vegetables that we often have in the holiday time can make up half of your plate.
Okay. I think that's a really smart plan to keep that in your mind as you're you know, traveling around for the holiday season. And my big final question for you, Kim, is, you know, how do you get back on track after the holidays, assuming you have fallen off the wagon?
Well, you don't wait till after the holidays. So on a day that you're not receiving, so let's say you're not partying, you're not going anywhere. So for instance, I know Christmas Eve, I have a party. Christmas Day, I have a party. Boxing Day, I'm back on track. Boxing Day is back to normal. And then I know I'm probably not, you know, doing a whole lot of partying till New Year's Eve. So that week in between is right back to normal.
Fantastic. So people need to keep that in their head that they don't just wait till January 2nd to get themselves organized.
No, you start, like, you get back to as normal as possible. Freeze leftovers. They make great lunches. You can take all those foods that you're looking at and that you eat during the holiday time, and you can send care packages home to different people. But make sure that you get back to normal as soon as you can.
fantastic. Kim, thank you so much for your time and happy holidays.
Thank you, and you too, and to all our listeners.
Awesome. And before I forget, actually, I just wanted you to mention your book one more time, because we didn't talk about
that. Oh, yes. Okay. So the book that I've written with Dr. Michael Starr is The Complete Arthritis Health Diet Guide and Cookbook, and it's in bookstores and on Amazon, or at Indigo, and you can get it off my website as well. And on my website this month, I'll be publishing a tip a day on how to survive the holidays.
Fantastic. That's our dietitian, Kim Airy. And again, you can check her out on her website, kimairy.com, and learn more about her as well on our website, kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
A very special thank you going out to my guests this week, Victoria Duffield, Warren Eckstein, Karen Cleveland, as well as Kim Airy. I want to leave you with your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time from Robert A. Heinlein. Some people insist that mediocre is better than best. They delight in clipping wings because they themselves can't fly. Now, next week, we're very excited because it's our holiday show, Kelly's Christmas Crazy, and we cannot wait for you to be a part of it. We've got lots of cool surprises, so again, join us next week for our Kelly Alexander Show holiday special. Don't forget as well to keep checking our website for lots of blogs and recipes and all sorts of good stuff, kellyalexandershow.com. Also, we'd love for you to follow us on Twitter, @KAlexanderShow. Have a great week. If you have any comments or questions, Kelly @KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.